Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Doug Ibendahl, Nick Kacharubas, Charles Lipson, and Mike Miller. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it is Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to send me a tweet, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O, and you can join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com. That's the audio and video portion, not only live, but again, you can go to it if you miss it every Sunday night. There are 71 days to go before the Republican convention in Cleveland, 183 days to go before Election Day in November. And again, we have, as a result of the voters in Indiana last week, we have a clear winner in the Republican primary, although we still have to wait 71 more days for the official crowning to take place. But Donald Trump is now the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. Immediately after that, or the next day, his principal challenger, Ted Cruz, dropped out, and then John Kasich dropped out. So there's no one. I guess the big, big losers, as we look ahead, are the people that own television and radio stations in the state of California. They lost a lot of money. But again, there will still be some campaigns going on between now and California. But again, California is now a moot point. But Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee for president. And again, I want to remind people that back on November 1st of last year on this program, I said there were only three people who could be elected president of the United States: Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and yes, Donald Trump. And I took a lot of guff for it when I said it 6 months ago. Obviously, Marco Rubio is out of the picture, although I still think he could have been reelected, but he couldn't get the nomination. That's the problem. So we now have the race that I think most people in media, the media want, and that is Clinton versus Trump. And again, the result of that that decision last week is the big, big question, which will probably be debated for the next 71 days or longer, is how many people within the Republican Party who were part of the also-ran team, how many of them are going to jump on the Trump bandwagon? And again, last week, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, sent an indication that he is not yet ready to endorse Donald Trump. Doug Ibendahl is here. He's become a familiar voice and face on this program over the last several months as a supporter of Donald Trump. So my question to you is, it seems to me that the media has sort of overreacted to Paul Ryan's comments this past week, and then Donald Trump had a response to it that said maybe he's not ready to, you know, meet Paul Ryan yet, although they are going to meet Thursday. How serious is, how important is it, let me put it this way, is it for Donald Trump to get at least some leadership members of the party back on his team?
Well, first,
or on his team.
Well, first, Bruce, thanks for having me on. Obviously, Donald Trump wants to unify this party, and I know that he will. And his message to, you know, Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney, you know, anyone else out the Bushes, anyone else out there who may be hesitating is, you know, this train is leaving, and you're welcome aboard. But if you can't, if you want to be petty, if you want to, you know, act like this is some, you know, high school clique, and if you can't get over, you know, losing, then so be it. I mean, look, we were talking about a tiny number of people. Paul Ryan has the same vote in November. He's got one vote just like the rest of us. And, you know, shame on him. But I think Paul Ryan's position here by waffling has completely backfired on him.
All right, I want to get reaction. Mike Miller, you were here. You have been a card-carrying conservative college professor when you've been on this program for the last several years. Mm-hmm. Last time you were on this program, you said basically you could not support Donald Trump if he's the nominee, and you said you probably would go for Gary Johnson.
Wow, you remember, yes.
Okay. Do you stand by everything that you said in the past?
I do. That does not mean, however, that I think that Trump is going to necessarily lose. And the reason is how notoriously bad of a candidate Hillary Clinton is. Even if she doesn't get indicted, she's just a terrible candidate.
How important is the story about about Speaker Ryan not – I mean, is that an inside the Beltway story that's getting overplayed?
I think so, because the whole point, the whole allure of Trump has been to go against the establishment. And it has happened over and over and over again.
Nick Kantarubas from DePaul also joins us, political science professor. What is your take on the importance of the Paul Ryan decision last week and this little dance we're going to have for maybe for the next 71 days?
I think it is important. I think that although Paul Ryan may be considered an in-the-Beltway personality, he is a figurehead within what we might consider the more mainstream Republican Party. And it just shows, you know, how many people within that kind of mainstream party are not 100% behind Trump. And there's a lot of healing that has to occur for Trump to be successful, not necessarily just because of electoral politics, but because of policy-driven politics and getting things passed through a Congress.
Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, you are a Paul Ryan fan. Are you a fan of his statements this past week?
Well, let me analyze what I think is behind them. I think that what's really going on is that it's not Trump is saying that the people who don't support him are just insiders. That's true of some of them, but a number of them are lifelong conservatives, and they're not certain about Trump's conservative credentials. He didn't exactly run as a conservative. He ran as a populist. And so I think that...
But all the big names thus far that were rolled out, literally rolled out on Meet the Press today, they were all establishment Republicans. They weren't necessarily leaders of the conservative movement. I mean, there are the Bushes. Even Susana Martinez is more of a pragmatist, although that didn't surprise anybody with her comments.
Well, I agree with that. I'm saying that the people who are reluctant for a couple of reasons. Some, they're not always the same. The people who are the big business Republicans and the centrist Republicans are don't like the populism.
But here's the point. This gets to what Doug's point. Those people with all the money, all the brains, all the smart one, all the smart money that was on Jeb Bush and 16 other or 15 other establishment types, they got their butt kicked. They're not used to getting their butt kicked. So I guess my question to you or everybody would be, why should we care about them at all?
Exactly. Regular voters can see what's going on here. This is the same old thing with the Bushes, the Romneys, the Paul Ryans. When they talk about unity, it's all one way. All the other candidates signed a loyalty oath. If Donald Trump had lost and hadn't withheld that, he would have been crucified. But now, you know, these guys want to go back on their word. That's fine. You know what? I was not excited about.
Trump said they were not honorable men today when he talked about.
They're not.
And Lindsey Graham.
No, they're not. They're being whiny little children. And, you know, I was not excited about John McCain or Mitt Romney, but I wasn't a whiny little child about it like these guys are being.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we've already have callers on the line. I think the blood pressure is already going up here in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border and now around the world on Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
From Chicago, you're listening to Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. And Charles Lipson, you had a point to make during the break.
Yeah, well, we ended with personal attacks on people who don't support Trump as being whiny losers. I've got to tell you, I not only find that disturbing, I find it worse than disturbing. And I find that the ad hominem attacks, that Carly Fiorina is ugly, that by contrast, Trump has a beautiful wife, and it's a more beautiful wife than Cruz. And if you don't like him, you're little or you're whining and so forth. I find that something like caudillo personalistic politics, I find it truly disgusting.
Well, no one has been on the receiving end of more nasty personal attacks than Donald Trump and his supporters. I mean, I would challenge you to prove otherwise. That is a fact. That is a fact. They've been called stupid, unintelligent, poorly educated. I mean, come on.
But as a leader, you would think that
he did not defend anything that Trump himself had said. He merely attacked other people for attracting Trump supporters, who I was not defending.
Charles, everybody listening knows that. And everybody listening has had a chance, unless with about 7 or 8 states.
Right.
They've had a chance to render a verdict.
Right.
On his public utterances, and whether they were despicable or not, and I agree some of them were low blows, but people have voted on that. That's in the rearview mirror now. What I thought you were going to take exception to,
yes.
and Donald Trump did say today, he said, you know, it was the South Carolina primary where everybody took the pledge. The first question everybody – and Donald Trump's was the first one to go up, and everybody thought he was the one that was going to back away from the pledge.
Right.
All 17 of them at the time, they all took the pledge, including the senior senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, who now says he's not going to support him. So my question is, that was a binding pledge. You could only get into that debate if you signed that pledge. They all got in. And Jeb Bush
– Yeah.
And we don't know what Jeb Bush is going to do. The indication is that he's not going to support – Lindsey Graham is definitely not going to support. So when Trump says today these are not honorable men,
I
what
agree
do you call
with
a person
that.
Who doesn't keep
no,
their pledge?
I agree with that. If they promised that they would do something and then they're not going to do it, then they've backed out of their pledge. I made no such pledge. I'm just telling you, I'm analyzing this,
right.
And I'm analyzing a kind of ad hominem populism that brings out some of the worst elements in American politics.
I want to correct you on something. First of all, you said Donald Trump said that Carly Fiorina was ugly. That is a misstatement. If you're referring to the comment, which was not in public, he was on his plane and they were watching Carly Fiorina on television, and a reporter overheard him say, "Oh, that face." But you know, if you're going to attack Donald Trump, at least get his quotes right.
Let me into a bigger, broader issue, and that is, those have voted. They have voted against the Washington establishment. They've dismissed. 16 of the 17 were certainly part of that establishment. They've all been dismissed from the race. And now we have a situation where the party should be united, and it's not united at the moment. It may never be united. But again, the chief spokesman for the inside the Beltway crowd is the Speaker of the House, obviously. He plays to a constituency of Republicans in the House. So my question to you is, if the constituents of the party, not Donald Trump, the constituents of the party responding to what Donald Trump said about just illegal immigration, if they have determined they're riled up, even, you know, you may not like, they seem to agree with his position on Muslims as well. So they are supporting some positions that many would say are beyond the pale. But when you have Paul Ryan, who's now basically saying, Donald Trump, you've got to basically, you know, you've got to tone it down a little bit. You've got to come to my side. After people have voted, can you see why people might be upset with Paul Ryan saying, here, Donald, you've run the race. Come kiss my ring. Because you know what? If you want to get elected, come kiss my ring.
I wouldn't frame it quite like that. What I think is going on for Ryan is that he's concerned that about preserving Republican majorities in the House and, if possible, in the Senate. So I think that there are a lot of down ballot concerns. I don't think
so. He's concerned about his own rear end and his own political future.
Oh, absolutely. Well, That's what politicians are.
More so than would you say that he's more concerned about saving the party than the country?
I think that most senior politicians think that the two are completely congruent.
Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I agree with Paul Ryan's comment. And he didn't say he wouldn't support it. He said he chose his word appropriately, said not willing. And I think he represents – I agree with the political comments, but I also think he represents a faction of – a large faction of the community, the Republican community, that does not necessarily support or is uncomfortable at this point with Trump. We can look at the last results of several of the primaries where Trump was ahead, but when there were 17 candidates, there were a lot of votes going to other candidates, and there are a lot of Republicans that are not 100% behind Trump.
Mike, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Where on the list of issues, where would you put illegal immigration and firming up the border security? Where would you put that on a list of issues that Republican voters have waged, or voted on and cast their opinions this?
I think it's very high on most Republicans. Okay. My only concern, and I'm a very big supporter of legal immigration, and I'm against illegal immigration. It's just that most of the illegal that stay here don't come through Mexico. They come on visas that they overstay. I am more than secure in trying to secure a border and saying that this is not racist when you secure a border. We have every right to do that.
I agree with that. I agree.
And whatever we can do to keep illegal Mexicans from coming over, we should do it. But building a wall and the Mexicans are going to build it when that is – or they're going to fund it, that's not the main issue.
You've heard me say, and I will – I'm not going to say anything tonight that's different from what I've said in the past other than I want to make a different point, and that is – Republicans and Democrats have talked about securing the border and illegal immigration for almost a decade
now. That's correct.
That's right.
And nothing has happened.
And nothing has happened.
Even
right.
with majorities, nothing has happened. President Bush tried to do it. It didn't happen. If you look at the issue of border security, which, again, is the main thing that Republicans are concerned about, the other thing that many people talk about, to me, you can't have meaningful immigration reform if you don't make E-Verify the law of the land.
Sure.
The guy standing in the way of E-Verify is Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
He is protecting all those business people, right, Republicans and Democrats, who basically are going to look the other way. They're going to wring their hands for another 20 years on this issue. So if that is your issue, and you're responding to the red meat that Donald Trump threw out there, if that's your issue, you shouldn't care a rat's ass, forgive me.
No surprise, I have a different take on this whole Paul Ryan thing. Paul Ryan is concerned about Paul Ryan. He's a typical career politician. This is about ego. This is about jealousy. You know, he was getting – remember they put out sort of a kind of an ad for him? You know, maybe – I honestly think that Paul Ryan is one of these guys – that is so self-centered that he really had delusions that, you know, that the delegates in Cleveland in July
even if he said emphatically he didn't want to do it.
We're going to carry them in on their shoulders and make him the nominee. And he's frankly just jealous that Donald Trump is sucking up all the attention and spotlight. I really think it's as simple as that. Look, 4 years ago when Mitt Romney was the day he became the presumptive nominee, there were none of these so-called leaders were sitting back and saying, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to endorse yet until we see if we really need to sit Mitt Romney down and really find out and have a come to Jesus with him.
But 3 million people, Republicans, many evangelicals, did not vote.
But
sat on their hands. They didn't have a rally. There was no press conference.
My point is, no one sat down with Mitt Romney to say, well, we really need to find out really where you stand. You know, where you stand on Obamacare, given that you were the father of Obamacare in Massachusetts. We didn't have that. It was just assumed that everyone would unite.
But missing from so much of Mr. Trump's debates has been details. He hasn't given details. Mitt Romney gave details.
I know that's a popular narrative. I disagree with that.
That got him in trouble.
Republicans were deeply concerned that Romney, by virtue of RomneyCare, gave away one of the central issues that should have been a campaign issue. Moreover, the 47% comment, which was recorded was devastating for a particular reason. The reason is, ultimately, the Republican Party is a Main Street and a Wall Street party. And he showed he was a Wall Street guy. And what you see with Trump is that there's a huge Main Street constituency. They want to be heard, and they rightly feel that they have not been.
And as a political analyst, I would say that if you're looking for wisdom on how to win a presidential campaign, you don't turn to the losing vice president who didn't even carry his home state in a presidential election. So I don't know whether, you know, he knows how to count the votes in Washington when it's only Republicans voting to elect him speaker. But as a political figure, he was not a very impressive running mate with Mitt Romney. Does anybody disagree with that?
I disagree with that.
He was a drag on the ticket. I agree with that.
I disagree. I thought he was perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Vice presidents don't carry their state. The last one who did was Lyndon Johnson in 1960. But the fact is, he was a perfectly fine running mate. Whether he would be a good president is a wholly different matter. His concern—
I think Al Gore carried for Bill Clinton. 92. He didn't carry it in 2000, but as a he was a vice president.
What? Bill, it may be, but Bill Clinton was the governor of the neighboring state and had a lot of popularity in Tennessee. The fact is, Paul Ryan is highly regarded, and not just by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. There are a lot of conservatives who think he speaks for them.
Okay, 1-800-723-8209. I don't disagree with that at all. 1-800-723-8209. We have callers on the line, and we will bring them into our conversation. And in the next half hour, we're going to talk about possible running mates for both tickets. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. I want to take a moment to talk about this little thing that made you carry either your iPhone or your Android. And I want to call your attention to Beyond the Beltway. This is our Facebook. We're trying to expand our Facebook friends. And if you want to go to Beyond the Beltway, you can become a Facebook friend. Give us the old thumbs up. And again, we will let you know in advance who some of the guests are. And throughout the week, I'll be offering some comments as well. But again, we want to see if we can drive our Facebook friends list up. So wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border, join us and befriend or friend us. I guess you don't befriend. You friend people on Facebook to get the terminology right. But again, Beyond the Beltway, they're right now. Let's go to Mike listening to us on KXLY in Spokane, Washington. That is where Donald Trump spent the last 24 hours. And Mike, go ahead. Did you go see him?
You're right. No, I didn't, but I watched him on TV. They carried it here on local TV, Bruce. Uh-huh. And he came in yesterday afternoon here to Spokane, Washington, spoke at the convention center here in Spokane.
How big a crowd did he draw?
About 4,000. It was filled.
Okay.
It didn't get any more in the convention center, so it was a filled house. Talked for about an hour, the economy, Hillary, other presidential candidates. And then the demonstrations were peaceful, no confrontations. The big surprise was that Trump was introduced by Mike Leach, or one of the surprises, who's the coach at Washington State University.
Uh-huh.
In Pullman, and he introduced Donald Trump. So, Trump—he's
doing very well with the coaches. He does very well with coaches.
You know, he is. He brought that up. Yeah, Bobby Knight and Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
and I'm sure Mike Ditka's for him as well, if he hasn't publicly announced it.
I think he is actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So,
You know, Mike, you mentioned one thing. You mentioned the rally last night, and we're going to play an excerpt from that, because at the rally, Donald Trump did something that he has alluded to in the past, and basically he has said in the campaign that if Hillary goes after him on sexism charges, he was going to let her know that he wasn't going to just sit by and be a punching bag on that. But he has indicated, he's indicated that he would be a counterpuncher if she brought the subject up. Well, last night in your hometown of Spokane, he didn't wait for her to bring it up. He brought it up, and this is what Donald Trump had to say last night about Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. Go ahead.
She's married to a man who was the worst abuser of women in the history of politics. Hillary was an enabler, and she treated these women horribly. Just remember this. And some of those women were destroyed, not by him, but by the way that Hillary Clinton treated them after everything went down.
Yeah. Nick Kacharubas, are you surprised that this issue has come up this early in the campaign?
No, not given the candidate Trump. He's very good at bringing things out that will get people aroused and get people interested in what he has to say. And I think playing the card early allows him the ability to start the dialogue the way he wants to start it, as opposed to being reactionary.
Charles Lipson.
I think that this is an important issue, actually. First of all, one of the things that Trump has done a number of things remarkably well. The first thing is that he has marketed in the sense of finding out what really was bothering people and going after them hard. Secondly, he's found the vulnerability of candidates, and he has absolutely hammered at them. And this crooked Hillary will stick because people actually think she is.
It's like the lying Ted.
The lying Ted was part of it. Little Marco was devastating. Low-energy Bush just captured it. So he's been very good at these things. I think it's going to be a largely negative campaign, but I've got to say, I think that the issue is a little tricky for Trump in the following sense. He's got to win a substantially larger percentage of women who are current than the numbers who are currently polling for him. And the same is true of Hispanics. But with regard to women, his attacks on Hillary, this is the perfect way. He's saying Hillary, he's not attacking Bill. He's saying Hillary destroyed women to preserve her political family. That's a potentially very devastating charge.
Yeah.
An enabler. That's a devastating charge.
That's a word and a term that a lot of people know, but I think women know that term.
That this is a very smart way to move, and we'll see if it begins to affect people.
Mike.
I absolutely agree. And a show several months back, Michael Bauer was on with us, and he said the thing that upsets him as a liberal is that once it was all over and it was clear that Bill had done these things to these women, or you know, to Monica Lewinsky and so forth, and after Hillary had attacked all these women, she did not apologize to say, my husband misled me. I went after you the way I would to protect my husband. I'm going to apologize to you for what I did. The idea that the Democrats the reason I find Trump's words so invigorating is that the Democrats for so long have talked about a war against women by Republicans.
He's going to
show
that a lot
is
of
absolutely
executives.
Preposterous.
A lot of executives at Trump are women. He's surrounded himself with strong women. He's going to be able to pull that out.
I never quite got that.
Yeah, Hillary was even much farther than an enabler, as others have said, and Mr. Trump has said. Hillary Clinton didn't just sit by and, you know, standing by her man.
She was active.
She was leading the effort, smearing and defaming these women who were accusing her husband of assault.
Does that, in your view, and by the way, we have 5 men around the table, so maybe I shouldn't even ask this question, but bringing up that issue as accusing her of being the enabler, not tying him to her, is that a way to try to get more women support? Is that going to be like a dog whistle and they're going to
The other side of that narrative is while she was doing that, while she was smearing and defaming women, Donald Trump was creating thousands of good jobs for women, and as the professor alluded to, A good proportion, a significant proportion of those jobs were actually at the executive level. You know, Donald Trump won this thing. It's really remarkable. I mean,
Fair and square.
Ran away with the nomination. I mean, if anyone would have said even a month ago that the Republican race would be settled before the Democrats, they would have said you were crazy. But think about it. He did that and basically did it with one arm tied behind his back. He hasn't even played some of his best cards yet about all the things he's built, all the people he's employed. I mean, he really hasn't. He shut down. He wouldn't allow super PACs to assist him. Someone would try to start one. He would shut it down. I mean, it's remarkable.
Is he going
to
do it now, though? Because not,
well,
now
I hope he does.
Now,
I hope he does.
Now he says he will.
He's going to welcome. He's going to welcome party assistance. Yeah, I think he should. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
He will. He's made such a big point of the fact that he couldn't be bought and that he was self-funding that he'll have to be able to go out and show exactly how this kind of funding won't undermine that narrative. But I do think that people, he has now so firmly established himself as an outsider that I think he's in a good position to do that.
I think also whether you hate Donald Trump, and I know there's a lot of people who hate Donald Trump and a lot of people who like Donald Trump, but I think as a political analyst, I think we have to say this is a remarkable political story.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
This is a presidential campaign that started less than a year ago, in right. mid-June of last year. And again, he is now the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, and he's done it playing his own rules, basically violating every tenet of politics and destroying, you know, 16 other potential people who, when you walked in, they looked like they had more credentials coming into the race. And he has done that. So we have to put it in context. Now, the next step, and this is the $64 million question, can he take all of what he's been able to do, can he parlay that into a majority position in November? Nick, what does your gut say?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's a given, but I certainly think it's possible because, as we've talked about, Hillary, I do think it's Hillary's race to lose, but Hillary has a lot of negatives. She has not she has her issues of coming across. People don't believe her. And I think there's also issues within the Democratic Party between people on who have been supporting Bernie Sanders, just as Trump has people who are Republicans that weren't willing to come over. There are Bernie Sanders fans that aren't willing to come over.
Mike,
she's got to overcome that.
Yeah, I one of the websites I go to all the time is Rear Clear Politics because they give you stuff from both sides. So I've been reading a lot of Salon lately, of all things. And you would not believe, if you've not read them, how they are going after Hillary in favor of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
They are just tearing her to pieces, almost to the point it almost sounds like anybody but Hillary or never Hillary. And they don't quite come out and say that, but there's a lot of dissension within
absolutely.
The Democratic
Party. That's right.
Party.
In fact, and I think this is quite right. And I think that the story is that there are going to be a lot fewer votes that are positive votes for Hillary than negative votes driven to her out of people who don't want to vote for Trump. And so that's why this is going to be a down and dirty, nasty campaign because both are going to be driving negatives.
I also think it's important that, you know, and we obviously, this is what we talk about each and every week on this program, but Donald Trump received over 10.6 million votes right now. And he will pass, I guess, the previous record was 10.8 by George Bush. He's likely to pass that when we get to June 7th in California. So he will have received more Republican primary votes than any Republican in the history of the country. However, Hillary has gotten more votes than Donald Trump. And here is the big stunning thing. With all this discussion, all this media, all the participants in the Republican and Democratic Party, only 20% of voters have voted. There's 80% of the people living in this country that we have no idea where they're coming from. And when we look at these polls that suggest that Hillary has a big lead, I think that Hillary, if I were betting the house right now, I'd say it would be Hillary. But I'm not so sure between now and Election Day.
She only had one opponent for much of that time.
That's exactly.
There's a lot. And an opponent that refused to go for the jugular.
Yep.
In some ways he did. But
until now.
He pulled some big punches. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to take calls. Back shortly.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Doug just said I shouldn't just be friends, that everybody should like me. They should like us.
Well, you need to go to the celebrity. You're a public figure. You should go to public figure.
I know you're modest, but you should be a public figure
on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to Jason listening to us in Washington, D.C. on the Internet. Nice to hear from you tonight.
Hey, guys. Let me just throw out a word for you that everybody needs to understand. The word's called algorithm, and this is the way it works.
Wasn't he the vice president under Clinton?
No, that was the guy that didn't win his home state, and if he had won it, he would have won the year.
That's true.
Election in 2000. But in order to cover his ass, he blamed it on Nader, even though over 100,000 people in Florida who were Democrats voted for Republicans.
You're right. Go ahead.
Let me throw this word out to you. It's called an algorithm. And this is the unseen enemy of every political campaign right now. This is the way it works. You're Mark Zuckerberg. You run the algorithms that turn out what will become the top of the Facebook news feeds that come up on your clients. You have a grudge against a political candidate. Maybe there's a story in Breitbart or maybe some other website that you don't like. Guess what? You push it to the bottom of the news feed, and you will shape elections. Because what happens is, and this is what people aren't getting about the new reality is, people are walking around with their own news organization sorting mechanisms. And what they're doing is, if you don't give them the news they want, they're not going to click on it. And what's happening is that parties, both parties, are going to fracture. They're fracturing now. It's only going to accelerate. Mary Madeline leaving the Republican Party, joining the Libertarian Party of Louisiana. She is the first. And the people you're alluding to earlier, these Bernie supporters, at least 25 to 30% of Bernie supporters will not vote for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
They hate her. Right. So what happens when they find out that Jill Stein of the Green Party has more ideologically in common with him, than they do with Hillary Clinton? It means that in a race with three or more people, and this is what we learned from George Bush, money means nothing when there's three or more people in a race. And now every computer model that you guys are going to try to go to or cite, it doesn't mean anything anymore when you have a Libertarian and a Green on a debate stage. And they start getting coverage.
I don't think that the third-party candidates will be an issue in this presidential race, but I think several things you said are very important. The first thing is I think that the newscape has deeply fractured, and I think that there's a deep distrust of mainstream news organizations because – however hidden the algorithm is on Google News, it's very obvious what it is on CBS News and NBC News, and people know they're not getting a fair shake on that. And the other thing is that I think that these party organizations mean less and less. Final thing to say about Trump here is that we've missed one critical element of Trump. Politicians spend fortunes to get name recognition. Trump began the race with very high name recognition. People knew his name, and they, for the most part, liked it. That is, it's associated, for the most part, with success. Good things and success, and he's been able to exploit that. And we now see why his name is associated with that. He's a brilliant marketer.
He is. And I must say that even though I have, as of right now, based upon all of his stands, which are different than mine, I'm probably not going to support him. I actually admire him more now than I did at the beginning because I found him to be a very charming and bright and articulate guy. who can really know exactly where to put his ideas to get the people to support
him. You're almost
him.
On the Trump train, Mike. But you're almost there, my friend.
But his policies are all wrong.
I was not a Trump supporter when he first announced.
I was to agree with Mike. You know, I don't agree with what Trump necessarily says on a policy stand, but that's why I say that he can win
because
he knows what to say, and he with what this caller is saying is he gets to the top of the, he gets on top of people's radar screen. People know him, they're talking about him, whether you like him or not, you're talking about Trump.
I want to ask a question because we have three college professors here at the table, and we are all from Chicago. This program comes to you from Chicago each and every week, except occasionally when we do a remote broadcast. But I want to make a statement, and I want to see if everybody agrees with this. And that is, in the social circles where we travel, because we are in the third largest city in America, and three of you spend time on college campuses, and you are on this program tonight, and Mike, you're saying you really don't like Trump, and everyone else has been somewhat analytical. Can you go back to your respective campuses and can you say anything that would be objective about Donald Trump, some of which have been articulated tonight? Can you do that without suffering the wrath of your fellow constituents on campus?
No. University campuses are so dominantly liberal, far – I don't want to say far left, but certainly almost nothing in the middle. It's all left. And if you were a Trump supporter, you would be a pariah.
Charles?
The story that I saw today was that the few Harvard students who were for Hillary found that it was hard to be at Harvard if you weren't for Bernie. Yeah. So you can imagine what saying anything in favor of not just Trump, but saying it in favor of Paul Ryan or virtually any Republican.
Nick?
I would agree with Charles and Mike. First of all, you wouldn't want to say anything about any Republican, and you may not even want to say anything about Hillary. You'd want to say it about Bernie.
Does that mean – and then, Jason, we're going to go back to you. Does that mean that when the pollsters are polling – and again, we are in the third largest city, and again, polls include big markets and small markets and rural markets. Do you think the Trump vote is undercounted at this moment? Doug?
Well, you know, that's actually a very good point, Bruce. My thought would be – once Bernie is out, and you know, which is inevitable, and once the college students and the millennials realize that once it becomes obvious they're not going to get their college loans paid for by the government, next best thing, how about
Jill
a job?
Stein.
And that's Donald Trump.
No, but I want to go back to Jason because I had you up until the point where you said they're going to go to Trump. I don't think there's going to be a huge shift from
what
the Bernie support.
What happens if they learn who Jill Stein is?
That's right. Or the Libertarian, either one.
Bernie.
But no, let's. I think your point is, and I think you alluded to this a couple of weeks ago when you called Jason, and that is something else. Now that the news media has proven itself to be questionable in their coverage, I think the next great issue is going to be the Presidential Debate Commission, and whether or not we need to have a more expanded discussion of politics. And again, Jason, we're going to pick up on that.
Amen.
On the other side. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Thanks for being with us.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Donald Trump apparently has the Republican nomination locked up because he has no opponents running anymore. There's a couple of primaries coming up this Tuesday. Nebraska will vote, and also West Virginia. And Nebraska is kind of an interesting situation because the senator out there, Ben Sasse, has said he will not support Donald Trump, and he supports he said he would support a third party candidate against him. So again, you'll have the senator and Donald Trump. We'll see what happens, what will happen to Trump. But obviously, everybody's expecting that he will do well in Nebraska. He also said something on television today. He praised the governor, Governor Ricketts, of Nebraska today on television.
After Ricketts had said positive things about Trump.
Yes, but it's the rest of the Ricketts family, which owns the Chicago Cubs, that's poured a lot of money into the PACs opposing Donald Trump. So you got the Ricketts family, at least.
There's one that's right. There's one that's right.
What is right?
Well, the Governor Ricketts introduced Trump at a rally a couple of days ago.
That's what I'm just saying. So there's within the family, they've decided, hey, you know what? We're going to be like everybody else. We're going to be on both sides of this issue. They're going to work that out. West Virginia, Hillary has gone to West Virginia, and Donald Trump was there, and Hillary got herself in a little brouhaha with a local coal miner when she tried to campaign there. And, of course, it was 8 years ago that she did very well in West Virginia when she was running against Barack Obama. But, again, it brings up and we're going to spend some time talking about Hillary Clinton. But, you know, one of the things, and we don't have a card-carrying Democrat here tonight, but we've heard over and over again what a great Secretary of State she was, how smart she is. And
we heard it from me.
We haven't heard it for a while. But that's part of the Democrats' response whenever you bring up Hillary. But here's something that I question, and I've done this before. If she is really smart, why would she have said in a CNN town hall on the eve of the Ohio primary, why would she have said, when talking about coal and mining, why would she say, we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business? Why would any candidate running for president say that, knowing that a couple of weeks later she was going to be running in West Virginia, and she really was... she was embarrassed, I think, when she had the face off with the coal miner.
Well,
so
Bruce,
my question to you is, what's the answer?
You remember
Am I overstating this?
You remember what Michael Kinsley called a Washington gaffe? is when you accidentally say the truth. Yeah. And I think that that's what happened there. But I will say that there is a political logic, which is the Democratic Party, which used to be a party of working people, is now essentially a party of people who manufacture Priuses. It's a green energy party as an ideological concept, and a lot of their senior funding people, Tom Steyer types, are deeply committed. So I think it would be very hard, for example, for a Democrat to have said that she was in favor of the Keystone Pipeline. Look at how Hillary waffled on that for years. This is just an ideological position that's strong, in the same way that on the Republican side, you could not have said, well, I think tar sands are a very polluting thing, and I don't want to do that. There's just a deep division on this.
I can say even more succinct, very simple. Hillary Clinton does not have the political skills of her sexual predator husband. I mean, is that simple? I mean, this is not your quote.
I could see it happening, and I'll give her a little more grace on this, in the sense of she's trying to take on Bernie Sanders. He's come obviously stronger against her, and I think that comment was meant to placate to some of his supporters, and obviously probably not so smart in looking ahead to.
But let's look at what she said in the wake of Nancy Reagan's death. She made a comment about Ronald Reagan and his involvement in fighting AIDS. She made a statement which
that was simply wrong.
It was wrong, and it infuriated the gay and lesbian community. I mean, she had to walk that back. Right. But again, it seems to me when she said it, it was one of those things where, wait, I thought this was a politically astute woman, and she has not proven to be politically astute.
I guess I would admire her more if she would simply stand for something and then go with whatever the fallout is. Like, for example, I'm against ethanol subsidies. If I were running in Iowa, I'd tell them I'm against ethanol subsidies based upon principle. I'm an economist.
She's never had a sister soldier moment in her life. Right. Bill Clinton, for those who don't remember, stood up to the kind of extreme wing of his own party in the terms of African-American sort of interest group politics.
Right.
It was called a sister soldier moment because he stood up to a woman named who billed herself as sister soldier.
And he had a second one on that same subject about 3 weeks ago.
And pulled back from it.
Right.
And what that tells you is not that Bill Clinton has lost backbone, but that the Democratic Party has now moved to the point where even the head of the party cannot tell you the difference between a Democrat and a socialist.
Yeah. Right.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz
could not answer that question. She was asked that question over and over again.
That's correct.
As we look at the Democratic Party, however, it appears, again, Bernie Sanders did well in Indiana and is ahead in West Virginia. And we don't know where – I don't know exactly off the top of my head where he is in Nevada or in Nebraska, but he's done well in the Great Plains states in the past. So as we look between now and the January or June 7th, which is when the Democrats will vote in California as well, is it possible that she will win this nomination, but she will be on a losing streak when she heads to California?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Agree I agree with that as well, yeah. Particularly California. I mean, I think that that's a state that Bernie may be poised to do very well in, and that's at the end of the calendar.
What happens? Take us inside. We've been spending so much time talking about the Republican convention, which now is not going to be a contested convention. It looks like maybe some of the big excitement is going to be at the Democratic convention.
You know, Trump has done a brilliant job of exposing the rigged nature of both parties. And he's done a brilliant job of I got to give him credit. I mean, he talks about the rigged nature of the Democratic Party with the super delegates. But then he goes what I find so refreshing then is he says that the Republican Party is even worse, and I agree with him. Now, he's won so overwhelmingly that the poaching that the Cruz, the establishment forces have been doing at these state conventions now turns out it's not going to matter. But getting back to the super delegates, I think Hillary has made a miscalculation or mistake, but I guess she feels like she has no choice, that she has to rely on these super delegates. But that is just playing into Bernie Sanders' narrative that this whole thing is rigged and corrupt, and he's absolutely right about
that. What does she do with them, Mike?
With Bernie?
With Bernie.
What yeah, maybe... appoint him to something, maybe a Department of Labor or something like that. I don't know what to do with
Ambassador
Bernie.
Here's
another guy that I didn't know much about. I mean, he's an independent. He's not even a Democrat. He's a socialist, and I'm a free market guy. But I give the guy credit for being one who will stand on principle.
Yes.
When I first came on the show a couple of years ago, I said, one thing, Bruce, I'm an economist first and a Republican second. There are certain principles I simply can't violate regardless of what my party does. That's Bernie Sanders, and I admire that.
Well, he's not a Democrat.
He's not a Democrat.
He doesn't have to unite the party because he isn't in the party.
But when we come back, I want to hear, what does Hillary do with him in Philadelphia? What's going to happen in Philadelphia?
Give him a major speaking.
I don't think a major speaking role is just going to be enough.
No.
What does he want? And, let's find out. I want to get people listening as well. 1-800-723-8289. What do we do with Bernie Sanders?
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. This segment we're talking about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And he's like a Timex watch, only he doesn't take a beating. He keeps winning in places, although he's not picking up the delegates, or certainly the superdelegates, and is not likely to be the Democratic nominee. But again, he could come close. And what should be his role? I mean, I said before the break, giving him a speech is not going to keep him happy. Nick?
I don't think it'll keep him happy, but I think the more critical question is what gives Bernie Sanders supporters the most interest in being involved, maybe in crossing over to Hillary in the general election, which she would want to do.
Is he a viable vice president? He's older than she is.
I don't think
that's
so.
That's an old ticket. No. Does anybody believe that he is a potential vice president?
No.
No. What she wants to do is signal with the vice president not only the weakness on Hispanics with Trump, but she wants to signal a new generation. She wants somebody who will be younger.
So that eliminates Elizabeth Warren as well, because she's older.
Yeah. And, I think it eliminates Raul and Fidel Castro as well. So there are other Castro brothers.
Not Fidel. His name is...
I think it's a huge problem for
Hillary,
though.
The Cuban.
The Cuban.
But his name is not Fidel Castro.
No. I understand. I think it will actually quite possibly be one of the Castro brothers. I think what's so interesting.
I don't, but go ahead.
I think what's so interesting now about both candidates is that what's considered the sort of base part of the party that you would normally have behind you as you pivoted to the center or some such in the general election is in a way a problem for both candidates. In Hillary's case, she's got all the professionals, that's the superdelegates, but the enthusiastic young are not behind her.
No.
And as she tries to appeal to them, she's going to be less appealing to 42-year-old people with two children who are in the center of the electorate.
Since obviously the gender issue is one, she's doing very well with women.
Mm-hmm.
Although in the primaries against Bernie Sanders, it's a split decision.
Right.
So the younger ones are going with Bernie Sanders. But if Donald Trump appears to be making a case that this could be an all-male ticket, and there hasn't been serious discussions of who a female running mate might be for Donald Trump, well, we can talk about that in the next segment. But again, what would you think if she selected a woman? A woman running mate. If this is going to be a historic battle, and many people will be voting for her because she is a woman, would it be a good idea to have a woman as her running mate? Anybody think that's a good idea or horrible?
Other than Elizabeth Warren, who would it be?
Senator Klobuchar of Minnesota,
yeah,
perhaps?
Nobody has heard of her. I never heard that.
Right. I don't think it would hurt her. I think that you would – I think if she is seen as picking a woman because the candidate is a woman, that might hurt her. I think we are now entering a stage in American politics where candidates like Klobuchar and others, Warren, was not elected because she was a woman. She was elected because of a whole set of policy positions that she held.
What should a vice presidential candidate deliver to a ticket?
Well,
generally speaking, what have they done? What role have they played? And as Charles has said, they're not necessarily the deciding factor, but it is one of the first major decisions a candidate makes.
Yeah. Well, and I think when we look at the vice presidential candidate, they need to add something to the kind of the leadership style or the personality of that president. Like when we look at Obama, he added Biden to kind of show that he had somebody with kind of the experience there. Speaking to
steady hand.
Yeah, is that sort of thing. I think in Hillary's case, you know, we look at the age of Hillary and Bernie, and it's not in a negative way, but I think she wants to say that I can appeal to the younger generation, and I agree with Charles on that she would look to do that, to try to bring some of that energy over from the Bernie Sanders folks into – translate that into the
– Trump is –
Would Mark Warner – I mean, Mark Warner or Tim Kaine from Virginia be – I mean, they're not women, obviously, but again, it the other thing is that you try to win a state or change a state. Mm-hmm. Virginia is definitely going to be
– Tim Kaine would be an excellent choice, maybe Mark Warner as well. And the reason they would be is because – not only because Virginia is a purple state, but because she would be signaling where she wants the party to go.
One thing, by the way, back to Donald Trump. Already there's been a couple of issues in the primary that he's taken that he's indicated that he's going to maybe change a little bit on. He said he now has an open mind on the $7.25 minimum wage. He said because he went around the country and talked with a lot of people, he just says, people can't live on that. He acknowledged that, although early in the campaign, he said in some cases people are getting paid too much, which is something of all the things he said, that may be the thing he may want to walk back the most. But he said, let the states compete. People should the federal government should not set a minimum wage, but he said it's all right if states do it, and more states and municipalities are thinking about that.
Well, I'm not a fan of the minimum wage, but I am a fan of letting states experiment, just like you have Washington and Colorado with the decriminalization or legalization of marijuana. I think that's a wonderful thing. Let's see what happens. And I know that Seattle has instituted, I think, a $15 an hour minimum wage, and jobs have just collapsed in terms of new job creation. Great. So now we have an actual incubation. We take a look and see what happens. We see that it fails, and maybe now we will be a little more careful.
Is that one of these issues, Doug, that we're going to see Donald Trump softening his position in an attempt to sort of try to reach people that may – he may have turned off?
I think so. I think he's been very open about that. I mean, I think the story, the story we heard today, like you said, he was on ABC or something this morning and mm-hmm. said he's going to let the states decide that he was open to it. But, some of the press wanted to say, oh, he flip-flopped from the primary. I really don't recall him being so, in stone that he would never never be in favor. But the narrative of a billionaire traveling around the country and talking to regular people, miners in West Virginia or vegetable pickers in California, and sees a need for raising the minimum wage, I think that's a very good story, and I think that's the kind of thing that resonates with people.
And I think he's not going to be tagged with the idea that it's trickle-down economics. I think he's seen, actually, as a person who knows how to put people to work, but is not one of those people who sits in a corner CEO office and never deals with ordinary people. He has a big advantage there. I think that the biggest economic issue that he's been able to exploit, but that gives a lot of people pause, is economic nationalism, trade wars, all of those kind of issues.
Puts Hillary on the defense when it comes to NAFTA. NAFTA, and that's certainly when he's campaigning in the Rust Belt, he's going to hit NAFTA.
Donald Trump is an aspirational candidate. He's one of the few billionaires out there that people can identify with. You know, when he tells a story about, you know, they're coming from an event on the way to his private 757, that they stop at a fast food place, McDonald's, because Donald Trump likes fast food. He's about cleanliness and their uniformity. Yeah,
there's one other thing in terms of
people say, yeah, I can see doing that,
of why Trump could win. And as an economist, I'm an applied macro. I follow the economy very closely. I've heard a word which I have not heard in 7 years, and the word is recession. And I've seen very reputable people say that the probability of recession in the next 12 months is somewhere between 30% and 50%. If the economy would just happen to tank between now and then, and it's put on the backs of the Democrats, and you have Trump who has taken this particular tack that we're going to be America first, he could just pull it out.
It could be one of those outside events.
That's right.
That benefits him, which has happened several times in the campaign already.
Yep.
And in 2008, we had an economic shock. It occurred before the election.
Right.
It deeply damaged McCain because he was seen as a security guy, not an economics guy.
I mentioned earlier that only 20% of voters have voted. There's 80% of people who haven't been participating in any of this process thus far, despite all the massive media exposure. And what we have, which I think is unique. And we said that Donald Trump is part of what's happening in this country that's very unique. And so is Bernie Sanders. You have two people that are talking about different positions, but there's a common denominator of some of the issues, trade being one of them, and too much money and power and politics and things of that nature. So there is a similarity between what they're saying. And they are the political phenomenon that's happening. One a little right of center, the other left of center. But that's the big, big story. There is a call and a thirst for revolution of some kind. That's what's really been going on, and we see the results of the primary system right now. And we see Hillary Clinton, you know, stumbling her way to the Democratic nomination, although she may mathematically win. She has maybe a momentum issue or an engagement issue with a large percentage of those people that really do not like her who are supporting Bernie Sanders. So it seems to me that in the broader campaign, and Donald Trump is way behind at the moment, 30-plus points behind at the polls, it seems to me that the mood of the country, I'm wondering whether the people that have voted are the 20% of the people that are engaged. Are they really an outlier to the 80% that have not voted? In other words, the 80% that still has to vote, are they going to be establishment people, or are they going to be swept up in the phenomenon that's already out there, and it's already been demonstrated with the Trump support, with the Bernie Sanders support? It's the momentum. What do you think? I mean, politically, it's a genie out of a bottle. We really don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and I think that's where the outside factors come in, because we don't know. I think Hillary does have a momentum issue currently. I think Trump is in a little bit better position time-wise to be able to play the momentum forward, and he has ability to capture people's minds. But I would ask the question of how many people will stay home and vote because they're not either interested. I know many Republicans who have said, you know, if it's Trump versus Clinton, I'm not going to vote.
That's true every election, though. Really,
you know, I think there's one additional point that Trump has going for him.
15 seconds.
That tends to get underplayed. He's a doer. People are confident that our government has failed to accomplish things that are its core missions.
And if they don't, you're fired. We've heard
exactly.
Him say that.
No, and back people Charlotte, like that.
They like
they
that.
Do. Yes,
they Denifin. Do. Back Charlie from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Jeff Schumann back, and a reminder, we want you to get on Facebook, go to Beyond the Beltway. We'd like you to become a friend us and like us, because we want to expand that base, because what we'll be doing is we'll be sending out notifications about who guests are coming up and also things that are happening around the country. And also, I locked in all my credentials and everything for the Republican convention coming up, and so I will be there, and I'll keep you posted as to what's happening in Cleveland. And hopefully I will not have to have my battle gear on, but maybe things are subsiding a little bit, although it'll probably be very noisy on the outside. Let's go to Nick in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Nick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, I wanted to take issue with you, Bruce, about your statement of Donald Trump taking the nomination fairly and squarely.
Yes.
I think he used, it was a National Enquirer campaign, and he used every dirty trick. He used every name from what the comments he made about Ben Carson way back in Iowa to Ted Cruz's dad accusing him of being part of a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. I think that's not fair and square. It was not based on issues. It was based on sensationalism. It was based on fabricated things portrayed as truth. I just don't think that's fair and square.
How would you respond to those listening tonight who understand everything that you've just said, may have agreed with everything you've said, and yet they may have voted for Donald Trump? In other words, he did win election after election with some exceptions. What do you say about the people that heard that and still voted for him?
Well, I can't explain that. They were evidently not interested in issues. They were perhaps interested in the latest big thing that he was going to say and thought that who could speak the loudest and who could speak the worst language would be the winner of that. So I can't say why they would have not voted the issues, because if they would have voted the issues, of course, they would have went to those who were explaining and communicating those issues. But Donald Trump was just really making a lot of noise.
Making a lot of noise, but touching a nerve. So, again, you're obviously not a happy camper tonight. What are you going to do in November? Where do you think you're going to end up on Election Day?
Well, I'm not going to vote for whoever the Democrats nominate. I will vote for whoever the Republicans nominate, and I'll vote for the party. I think what the best thing that can happen for this country is that if Donald Trump would move away from his sensationalism, if he would move away from the image that I see him and his supporters, they're like monkeys in cages just slinging
right,
crap at everything
come on.
And waiting for things to...
Oh, you know, wait. It's not my show. I'll be a little patient for some sour grapes, even though it's been, you know, a week now. But, you know, making a monkey reference is... if you're going to criticize the tone of Trump's campaign, you're going to say that, caller?
Yes, and so the best thing that would happen if they would move away from that, because again, we just heard it again tonight where he was.
Let me finish.
If he'll move away from that, and if he'll move with a conservative base and with a conservative Congress, I think with his influence that we can get something good for this
country. I mean, caller, why exactly should somebody listen to a sore loser, you know, that's still with sour grapes when he won this thing by an overwhelming landslide margin? Why exactly would he take your advice?
Well, because part of what he's got to do is he's got to keep some Republicans on board.
I'm going to partly agree and partly disagree with the caller and with our Trump supporter. I think that the campaign was about some issues and about some sensationalism and some ad hominem attacks. Mm-hmm. And I think that it remains to be seen what mixture of all of those we will see going forward. I don't think that he if he had won the campaign on things like what happened with the National Enquirer and these assaults on Ted Cruz's father and so forth, if those had been really prominent, then I think your claim would be right. But I don't think that's why he won.
No,
he won because he promised initially to make the country safe from illegal immigration, and then he pivoted from that to an economic nationalist platform saying, I'm going to defend you against cheap wage jobs.
And then keeping Muslims out.
No one has been stronger on the issues than Donald Trump. Taking care of the veterans, border security, absolutely, and keeping the drugs out, by the way. It's not just about the illegal immigrants. Renegotiating these horrible trade deals and bringing jobs back. No one in this race was more specific on policy than Donald Trump. And yes, you know what? Here's what a lot of people don't get. What the brilliance of Donald Trump and why he is lightning in a bottle, because yes, he does the policy, but he also makes politics fun. And that's what the Republican Party has been missing for decades. He makes politics fun and exciting. And that's why we're going to see finally, I think we're actually going to have a national convention in Cleveland that's worth watching instead of that snooze fest we had 4 years ago. Just wait.
Let's go to Mark in Monterey, California. You think Donald Trump has made it fun too, right, Mark?
You know, I would agree, Bruce. Thank you very much. And you hit on something recently when you said that part of Trump's appeal is he's a doer. And I think one of the big problems with government is government is full of people that can't get things done. They promise a lot, but when they do something, it takes a lot longer and it costs a lot more. And Bruce, I watched a video on C-SPAN a number of years ago where Donald Trump testified to a Senate committee about rebuilding the United Nations building and how he had offered to rebuild it, you know, with no management. And he said, if you give me the job, I can rebuild the UN for $750 million. Well, the UN told them they figured it would cost $2.5 billion, and they're actually spending almost $3 billion to do the job.
I think you put your finger on something.
Yeah.
People want to get things done. My general view about this is that the government is doing too many things and doing too many things badly. So what I would like to hear from Trump that I have not heard is a pulling back on the full range of what government is involved in, from school lunches to every hiring decision to every state's bathroom policy.
And also everything that he wants to do, though, in many cases, a lot of what he wants to do is going to involve congressional involvement. So that is why at least some sort of a rapprochement with the speaker is important. See, they all got to get
that. That's the piece that I know we credit him with being able to get things done. Mm-hmm. I would like to see. And again, I think most of us here are open to Trump being, you know, in these roles. But I'd like to see his ability to work with. He says he can negotiate. He says, but we haven't seen that in an ability to bring people to his
side.
Here's
his next big deal. His next big decision is going to be, who does he tap as a running mate? Now, let me share some information that I received late yesterday afternoon from someone who has been, in the past, sort of high up in the Bush administration.
Okay.
He said that according to what he has heard, that there's three names that are being bandied around by Trump. One is Marco Rubio, who we discussed last week. The other is John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. And the third, this was a surprise one. Portman. Rob Portman,
of Ohio.
Who is the incumbent senator running for re-election in Ohio. So he's looking at Ohio and he's looking at Florida, two pivotal states that a Republican must win. With those names, I want to get everybody's reaction, then we'll give you the last word on this, Doug. Any reaction to these names? Now, you were for Kasich.
I was a Kasich-Rubio man because we would have taken Ohio and Florida.
If Kasich or Rubio was on the ticket with Trump, would you change your mind and vote for Trump?
No, because of his policies. No, I wouldn't. But I think he would have a better chance with Portman because of how he has attacked his own vice president. I mean, if he picked either Kasich or Rubio, you have little Marco and you have Kasich who he attacked. So I just...
Charles.
I'm largely on the same in the same boat. I find a number of the economic nationalist things to be troubling. I find some policies on immigration, when you strip away the hard words, to be relatively sensible. But I find that the kind of caudillo politics to be not very appealing.
Those three names, Portman, Kasich, and Rubio, again, I have heard elsewhere Gingrich. But yes. I'm talking about what I heard from an inside D.C. name.
Yeah, and I would have to say that I think the most – I like the name Rubio there. Even though they did not get along, but towards the end of the campaign, when Rubio stepped out, we were there that night when he right. did that. Trump has always been very, very he's complimentary towards Rubio. So I think that would be an interesting race. I'd like to see Kasich personally as a running mate. I think that would be interesting, but I don't know if Kasich would agree to such a position.
Who brings the most to that ticket? Obviously, they're being looked at because they might be able to bring Florida and or Ohio. What else do they bring to the ticket? I want to get your reaction to those names, because you've said negative things about Rubio, so has Donald Trump. But of those names, do any of them stick out for you?
What Newt Gingrich, who you named, been doing a phenomenal job speaking for Trump. And he's phenomenal. I mean, he's a bit from a different era. So
clearly his audition.
I mean, audition. I think he wants something to bring for another administration post. I will admit that Portman, I'm not really haven't done my due diligence on.
He's a free trade.
Rubio strikes me.
We got to pause. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Donald Trump last week, in responding to Paul Ryan's reluctance to endorse him at this moment for President of the United States, he said not just to Ryan, but the broader group of people that have not yet endorsed him. He says, if someone doesn't want to endorse me, I don't want their endorsement. It's okay. I'll release them. So he doesn't seem, if somebody's going to jump on the bandwagon, so be it. He's not going to kiss the ring too much. By the way, I'm going to throw a name out, and then we're going to take a call. This is a name on no one's list other than my own list, and I put it on Facebook last week. And hear me through. Mike Rogers, former Michigan congressman, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, former FBI agent, and one of the reigning experts on terrorism in the United States. In my view, he doesn't necessarily give you Michigan, because I think Trump may be able to get to Michigan without him. He's kind of an establishment guy. I don't know who he's come down to, who he's endorsed, but he would give you credibility as someone who really knows about national security and has been a D.C. Is a well-liked D.C. guy.
No way. I want to squash that immediately. There's a rare chance where I disagree with you.
That's okay,
Bruce. Hello, Michigan, the Flint water situation. He's got his fingerprints are on that. Come on, no way. Non-starter.
How are his fingerprints on that?
The dysfunction,
Congress.
No, it would be tagged with that. No, absolutely no. Come on, okay, non-starter.
All right, I've offered my suggestion, and we've got a rebuttal right here on the show. Let's go to Tom in Youngstown, Ohio. Tom, first of all, before you tell me about who what you're calling for, what about the possibility of either Kasich or Portman ending up as a running mate? What do you think of that idea?
You know, Bruce, I personally don't buy this idea that the Republicans have to have Ohio in order to win the presidency.
All right, you were alone, but go ahead, Tom. Yeah.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, there's always going to be, you know, just like with anything else, there's going to be a time when it doesn't happen, and, oh, gee, well, now we broke that myth, too.
Yes, I got it.
Anyway, wouldn't it be wiser for somebody to point out to all these conservative leadership people that aren't endorsing Trump that most of the country is in the middle, not far right, not far left,
yes,
and that it'd be far better to back somebody who may be a progressive, but who is their progressive. In other words, he's a progressive, but he's willing to be under the Republican tent, and he's willing to work with the conservative Republicans. And, you know, wasn't it Ronald Reagan who pointed out that he doesn't have to have 100% of everything?
Who you got a name? You got a name?
He's not progressive.
Do you have a name that you're going to suggest?
For vice president.
For vice president?
For vice president? No, I wasn't planning to.
Well, then I'm missing your point.
But you're going, I'm going back to what you were saying when you guys were talking about the whole business of Ryan and Jeb Bush and
the rest of them
not wanting to endorse
Trump.
And I'm just saying that wouldn't it be far better that somebody point out to them that, you know, getting 60% or 70% of what you want right now, this time around, and then 4 years later, or maybe even in a two-year period down the road, get more of it and then even more of it rather than just walk away from it?
Here's an out of the box choice for you for Trump. And I know he didn't do a great job in the debates, not the most touchy feely, but this is out of the box. Jim Webb, you know, he rounds out the military experience with Donald Trump lacks. He was good enough for Ronald Reagan. I mean, that's just out of the box. Look, but I don't pretend to try to, you know, recommend who Donald Trump should pick. One of his best skills is surrounding himself with the best people. So I know whoever he picks, it's going to be.
Well, we'll see.
I want to.
So I've shot your idea down. You shot my idea
down. Fair enough, sir.
Amid all this crossfire, I also want to crossfire, but I want to crossfire a little bit at the caller. I think you've just got to win Ohio. I think Ohio and Florida are always the key to the election. If you win both of those states, you not only win them, you're going to be winning a lot of other states. If you
Hillary's allegedly, Sherrod Brown, the other United States senator, is allegedly on one of her lists. The problem is that, again, if he were elected, then the Democrats or the Republican governor would appoint a Republican to replace him, and let's also not forget
Donald Trump is a game changer. He's going to put states in play that have not been in play for the Republican Party for a long time.
I agree with that.
We'll see.
But you have to win. You have to still have to win Ohio. And if he's going to change anything, it will have to be a state like Pennsylvania.
Let's go to David. We're going to give the final word to David. David, go ahead. You're listening to us on XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce, and hi, the guests. I forgot to tell you, I'm really disappointed in politicians, and in your guests, too. How could they support a guy like this? This guy is 70-year-old. This is, you could equate him with a guy, crazy guy on the corner spouting all kinds of crazy stuff. You would be afraid of your kids having being around him. And here, you're going to give him the Oval Office, and you're talking about a vice president who's going to help him. Nothing's going to help this guy. This guy is so dangerous to this country that if he's elected, this is the beginning of the downfall of this country.
Bernie Sanders.
And people who support him, dedicated politicians who served this country for so long, telling me that they could support this guy.
Let me be clear. I'm not supporting anyone on this program. But let me just say what I'm saying is I'm not going to put my head in the sand and ignore what is happening in this country with Donald Trump and with Bernie Sanders, and it is a pox on everybody's house. Everyone is really ticked off at the way that politicians have dealt with issues. They are furious about it. And so we really do not know. The enthusiasm that's out there, it's out there for Donald Trump on one side. It's out there for Bernie Sanders on the other side. Throw the rascals out. And I'm just saying is, with that much momentum going on, this is a historic election.
That's true.
I don't think you can just say automatically, and I think too many Democrats say this. They think this is going to be a cakewalk. I got to tell you, the reason the Democrats get so infuriated about Donald Trump is I think they're scared out of their minds.
I agree.
This guy might get elected.
And there's only been one person on this panel who has really been strongly pro-Trump. The rest of us have been analytics. Right. Some things are good and some aren't. Right.
David, we got to say goodbye to you, and we got to say goodbye to everybody. Our thanks. This program is a Jenneby production produced in association with WYND Radio. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.